Holly Gibbs, and for this week's Happy Pod from the BBC World Service, we are in Montreal for the One Young World Summit.
Bonjour tout le monde, bienvenue à Montréal, and welcome to One Young World!
We've met young leaders and innovators from more than 190 countries who have gathered to confront the biggest challenges facing humanity. Despite the difficult themes discussed here in Canada, the people we've met have shown so much optimism, hope, and solutions for the future, and we're going to share their inspiring stories with you.
When you see the way that we challenge things in Parliament, they're just really different, and it's definitely what I'm aligned to.
They're also using the knowledge they gain here to make a real difference back home.
I already know that there was sustainable and biodegradable products around the globe, but I never had the chance to see these products in Brazil.
There are so many young people from around the world that really care. I'm not alone in what I'm doing, and there's other young change makers who are on the same path, and we're gonna change this world, and it's one step at a time.
First up in Montreal is Hannah Rafiti Maipi Clark. She became New Zealand's youngest MP for more than 170 years when she was elected into Parliament last year. And it wasn't just her age that caught attention. So did this. During her inauguration, Hannah performed a ceremonial haka, a traditional ritual of the Maori people. Her work has gathered global recognition, and now she's been named as one of the politicians of the year at the One Young World Summit here in Canada. So, what's it like being a 22-year-old MP? Our reporter, Jacob Evans, caught up with Hannah and began by asking her how she felt after winning the award.
Very humbled. For us is a saying, kore te kumarai kore ro motu nā kereka, which means the sweet potato will never say how sweet it is. So I'm accepting this award not for myself but for the people around me who've raised me.
So how did you get into politics?
Okay, so never been into politics, but I am into standing up for our people. My grandparents have been heavily involved in kind of always challenging the status quo through activism. So I've always kind of just been surrounded in that environment, which, yeah, I guess inspired me to the party that I'm a part of is Te Pāti Māori, which is an all-Indigenous party. When you see the way that we challenge things in Parliament, they're just really different, and it's definitely what I'm aligned to.
And talking of challenging things in Parliament, you went viral for doing the haka in Parliament. Talk to me about that and how important it was for you to do that.
So haka is a form of expression. It's more than a performance. It's more so a, physical embodiment of expressing our culture. We do that through singing, chants, instruments. But this haka was not for anyone else. It was purely just to calm my nerves down, and that's what I'm used to do.
So, you know, being 22 and being in Parliament, you're the youngest elected MP in 170 years. What's that like? Do you think people treat you differently for being so young?
I think there's many factors, like being young, being female, and also being Māori is super, super challenging. Not just for myself, but for us as a people. And then at the same time, I'm 22, so my outlook on it is that I want our people to see us living and thriving.
And so, you know, we talked to you about as you as a politician, but what about you as a person? What do your friends make of this journey you're on?
So I've got two of my best friends actually here on the trip with me, and I've got a kapaka group that is with me as well. And that just goes to the saying that I didn't want to come here alone, and I'm never put in positions where I'm alone. I travel as much as I can with three generations, so my parents and my grandparents and anyone from those generations. And it's important that I travel with three generations, even though it's a little bit costly, because there's also something that we call tikanga, which is customs, that keep us safe. And I guess that is why my strong foundation, why I'm able to do the work that I can do, because my foundation is so strong and I'm protected.
And are you just like every other normal 22-year-old?
Definitely.
Yeah. Are you chronically online?
Yeah, I'm a sucker for TikTok. I'll just scroll constantly. Like this morning, like for 2 hours, I should have been doing work. But I guess I don't see them as guilty pleasures. But actually, now I've reframed that to self-care. So it's okay to go on my phone, to watch movies, to watch Netflix.
And sort of lastly, what's your ambition? What do you want to do in the future?
I don't even know what I'm doing tomorrow.
Jacob Evans speaking with Hannah Rafiti Maipi Clark. Now to technology that aims to stop cyberbullying before the damage is done. Trisha Prabhu, who's 24 years old, has been recognised at this summit for her company Rethink, and it all started when she took a free coding class at her local library. I met with Trisha and started by asking her why she wanted to create the technology.
Unfortunately, you know, at first I had my own experience with online harassment, like so many members of Gen Z today. Sadly, it's become a rite of passage in some ways for our generation. I, for a very long time, I think like a lot of victims, thought there was something wrong with me, that I was the problem. And my wake-up call was realizing much later, a couple years later, that in fact cyberbullying was a silent pandemic, because I started to read and see news stories of other young people who had been cyberbullied, sometimes in extreme ways with really damaging consequences. I was just horrified, and I could not believe that, you know, it was in the news cycle and then it would disappear. And it was almost like we were accepting that that was just the world we had to live in. I felt like I could not be a bystander to that, and I decided, okay, I have to do something.
And a bit about you. You have been nominated as the Entrepreneur of the Year at the One Young World Summit. How does that feel?
It feels very surreal. I remember getting the email thinking, oh my goodness, me? I was so floored and just so grateful. I think it's a testament to the power of young people's voices to do things. Value in our world is not just monetary. And I think that that's something that business needs to wake up to more and more. And I think social entrepreneurship is a really beautiful example of how you can build an organization that has tremendous impact that you're incredibly proud of and create value in a lot of different ways. But you can also create a world that's consistent with the values that you want to live. And we do that by building technology that helps youth to pause and rethink before they say something that could be offensive. Our vision is really to get young people to embrace the intentionality and criticality that they may apply in in-person settings, but they may not do online. And in doing so, really create this revolution around the digital world where we are centering positivity and kindness in our interactions instead of a lot of the toxicity and hate that characterizes a lot of our digital experience today.
And have you had any user feedback from people that use Rethink?
Yes, and that's probably one of the most special parts of my job is hearing from young people who have, you know, benefited from the technology in some way. A lot of the discourse we have around cyberbullies today, the message is very much, these kids are awful. And if you think about it, you know, the fundamental assumption that Rethink is rooted on is, no, it's not that, you know, we're all awful people or Gen Z is just so terrible. It's that we've been put in this environment that is so frictionless and, you know, can feel so ephemeral that you'll say and do things that you would never do in person. And so what we need to do is to be able to reclaim our humanity online. Some of the funniest feedback I receive is from adults, actually, who will tell me, I need this for my work email.
How do you balance being 24 and an entrepreneur and achieving everything that you have?
It's a lot. There are definitely days where, you know, I wish I'd gotten a little bit more sleep, or days where it can feel a little surreal, the shifts. Like I remember in high school, because I started this work when I was 13, you know, sometimes I would go from like a math test to receiving an award on an international stage. And it was like the stark contrast between those things could be kind of funny. But I mean, for me, balancing it all, I think, is having a supportive community around me. Those are professional mentors, but it's also family and friends, people who know me for me and celebrate me for me and all of the contexts that, you know, I appear in, whether it's me just being a 24-year-old and, you know, going out with some friends and getting dinner, or it's me as founder and CEO doing this work. So I think that is really, really helpful.
Did you always want to be an entrepreneur?
I did not, no. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a princess, and then I wanted to be an astronaut, and then I wanted to be an author for the longest time.
There's still time to become a princess. This is the Happy Pod. What makes you happy?
I think seeing young people do things that make our world better makes me really, really happy, because it gives me a lot of hope for the future of our world.
That was Trisha Prabhu. Around the world, millions of women and girls still cannot afford menstrual products or even have access to them. It's called period poverty, and one young activist is hoping to eradicate it in her native Brazil. There, one in four do not have access to sanitary products. Patricia Zanella created her country's first 100% biodegradable sanitary pad and uses local communities to distribute them to every corner of Brazil. Siobhan Leahy saw her at the summit.
We saw menstrual poverty in our daily routine. So I already supported women to buy pads. And when I started this program, I was thinking, how this woman that don't have access to pads, when she didn't find someone like me that will support her, what this woman will do on the next month? And I already know that there was sustainable and biodegradable products around the globe, but I never had the chance to see these products in Brazil.
So you employ women to make the sanitary pads, is that right?
Yes.
So that's a kind of a whole new way of engaging women, like you say, into work. But you've got the sanitary pad in front of us. Do you want to show us what makes it different? Because I'm looking at it, it doesn't look any different to an ordinary sanitary pad.
Yeah, the difference is that he didn't take 500 years to decompose, just 6 months. We were able to do this using raw materials from Brazil. So it's from bamboo, cellulose, natural glue. So all the process is really natural and all the fibers are hypoallergenic. Mm-hmm.
So let me have a little feel. Oh, it's very nice and soft.
Yeah, it's soft.
So how do you get these out to people who need them the most? How are they reaching the people who experience menstrual poverty?
So this is the most incredible part of our work. We are able to work with different stakeholders to provide, first of all, the funding for the production. So the women that are producing also have access to the pads. When we did the production, we already know where this production will go. So, for example, our last production, it was 100% to donation for NGOs in Salvador, Bahia. And this is incredible because we had the chance to have sponsors that provide us the funding for do this production. And after this, we were able to give this production. We are rethinking the way that pads are done and distributed to the needs of the communities that we are working for.
Patricia Zanella speaking with Siobhan Leahy. You're listening to a special edition of The Happy Pod recorded at the One Young World Summit in Montreal, Canada. Coming up,
Prince William said he loved what we do and he actually went on to call me the Queen of Africa, which was really insane.
The teenage mum turned CEO who caught the eye of royalty. Some say a picture is worth a thousand words, and that's the case for César Dezfouli, a Spanish-Iranian photojournalist who is one of the winners of the One Young World Journalist of the Year award. His work focuses on migration, human rights and international affairs. I asked César what it feels like to be a winner.
It's a pleasure to be part of a community that is recognizing young leaders around the world, and it's, I feel honored. And it's a responsibility as well, because there are like important names that were awarded before and people who are doing amazing, and it feels big to be among them. It's been like 12 years I'm working as a photojournalist. I think and I believe that photography is a language that we use in daily basis. I believe this specific language to tell things is so important these days that we need people who are experts on communicating through photography. So what I do is to make sure that the stories I tell through photography are meaningful, are journalistic, and to make sure that I send messages in the right way through photography.
And talk to us a bit about the power of photography.
You can send very different messages through one same picture. So when you are making a photograph, you can probably direct the way people will interact with every reality that you are photographing. So you can photograph a reality from a perspective that is going to create hope, an interest and happiness, depends on what you want to create. Or you can create drama, you can create or repeat the stereotypes that have already been built on those realities. I have been trying to run away from the usual representation of migrants, usually this construction of the migrant identity as a mass, as people that we cannot connect with, we cannot identify. And what I do is to photograph individuals that I always name, I always know who they are, and I tell their stories from a closer perspective, but in context where we can identify with them. So we can see regular people having regular lives in regular spaces to tell this story from a positive perspective, from a better perspective, from a more human and empathetic perspective that helps audiences to connect. It makes my work make sense.
How does it feel to be making waves as a young person? And what would you say to other young people who want to get into a field that is mostly dominated by people not their age?
So my advice is to believe in what you do, to make sure you don't judge too much the ones who are there, but try to understand what they do and why they are there, and try to bring something with you. Try to find what you can add to those structures that are already existing and how you can improve them, and make sure that you are respectful with the realities that you are reporting on.
How are you going to celebrate your award?
I don't know. I didn't plan. I think we're going to probably party tonight and celebrate, hopefully, I don't know. And then with friends when I'm back home. But I didn't plan a celebration.
Cesar Desfouli. Another business leader who's been honoured here in Montreal is Charlotte Magaye, the founder of Mukuru Clean Stoves. Charlotte grew up in one of the biggest slums in Nairobi. By the age of 10, she was an orphan, and at 16, she became a mother, leading her to drop out of school and find a job selling charcoal. Then, when her daughter suffered severe burns from a traditional stove, Charlotte was inspired to create her own business, producing child and environmentally friendly stoves that can now be found in 2 million homes across Kenya. She also won the 2022 Earthshot Prize. She's been speaking to the Happy Pod's Siobhan Leahy.
Initially, I just wanted to build a more stable stove to limit the risk of burns in children under the age of 5. And while doing more research on that was when I realized that, you know, household air pollution and high cost of fuel were also a factor, and I needed to solve all three. So then I went on ahead and designed a stove that would then go and solve three problems.
When did you know that you had become successful? When did that moment happen?
I think I've had different moments where I've felt, again, because you're an entrepreneur, so you never really feel successful. And then there are days when you feel like a loser, there are days that you feel like, you know, invisible. And the more recent moment was, I think, when I was in London for Climate Week. And Prince William said he loved what we do, and he actually went on to call me the Queen of Africa, which was really insane. But I thought he wouldn't do that if he didn't think what we do is inspirational and impactful. And that is such a moment of pride for me, because when then things don't go right or when I'm struggling, I replay that moment in my head. Yeah.
So obviously, you said you feel very grateful to win these awards, but how do you stay happy? How do you stay positive? What makes you really, yeah, really happy?
I think what makes me happy is seeing the life that I have managed to build for myself. My life was going to take a very different turn. Like, this was not what I was going to live up to be. I wasn't going to have the family that I have. I wasn't going to have, you know, the work that I have. So I got really lucky. And is knowing that I was one choice away from living a very different life.
And everyday things that make you happy, that get you motivated. Because you know what? Everyone has those mornings where they get up and they go, oh, I want to go to work. But yeah, you've got a big company. You have a very busy schedule. How do you keep yourself motivated and keep yourself happy?
Yeah. Oh, man, I love food. So every day, if I wake up and I'm having a difficult day and I smell pancakes, or like I know there's some sweet corn in my fridge that I can boil and eat, it brings me so much joy. And books. Books are my favorite pickup. Just because books also did save my life. But those are some of the things that every day when it gets rough, I'm very easy to make happy. Just give me pancakes. So like sweet corn.
I want to talk about that books
saved your life. What do you mean by that?
I mean, the place that I grew up was, as you know, quite dangerous, you know, and just not, it wasn't a pretty life. A lot of the people I grew up with, the way life turned out for them was very different. But my love for books saved me because of the fact that I was able to speak differently. I had great vocabulary. And so the first chance that books ever gave me was getting pen pals because I could write composition really well. And so I got pen pals from the UK, from the US, and I would just write to a bunch of kids my age. And that helped give me opportunities to see the outside world, the world outside of Mukuru. When I say books saved my life, I mean I would have a completely different life if I couldn't communicate. And I was able to communicate because of the fact that I loved reading.
Charlotte Magaye. From the north of Nigeria to the front cover of Forbes magazine, with no business training or fashion experience, Fatima Babakura created a luxury accessories brand. And now she's giving back to the community that raised her. Siobhan caught up with her at the One Young World Summit.
So growing up in Nigeria, I'm a northern girl, and a northern girl means that, you know, we're very conservative. We go to school, we come back, and usually, like, after university, you aspire to marriage. Even if you do end up getting a career, it's like you do it, but you don't put it in our faces, you know, very quiet. That's what the culture is. And so, you know, having to, like, just explain to people why I do things and do it, like, on a global stage, you know, be out there, be on, like, news, interviews, like just showing myself, a lot of people didn't understand. Mostly, you know, the male figures in like our society is, you know, something that was challenging, but it's, you know, I've done it and it's inspired a lot of people to now want to like start businesses while maintaining those values and like cultural like norms. Since building my businesses, I've realized what really keeps me like in it and also happy is just the why, the reason why I do it. So with my perfumes business, for example, beyond, you know, like making money, you know, as with any business, it's also to empower the women who come from where I come from. You know, it's a community that has been affected by Boko Haram. It's a community of women who are not like entrepreneurs, but support their family the little way that they could. And so, you know, we work with women like that to be able to make our incense. And what we've done is, you know, take some of our profits, actually 50% of our profit, and send it to them. And so it's really the reason why I do things is to just make sure that beyond making money, I'm making impact in like people's lives, especially the lives of women.
Okay, so now on to the very glamorous part. Tell me about your collection and what you design.
So I love to think about my shoe and bag business as, you know, every day is a party. You should be able to wear something that makes you feel like you're celebrating yourself, even if you weren't going to an event. You know, something that makes you feel you're most confident, you're most happy in our shoes and our bags.
I hear that a certain Beyonce has worn one of your bags. I mean, what?
Yeah, so in 2020, when Beyonce did the compilation of like black businesses in the world, we were lucky to be featured in, you know, in that list, and it was really beautiful and I felt very honored, and you know, it changed a lot of things for our business.
Oh my gosh, what was that moment like when you realized Beyonce had singled out your business?
Honestly, at first I thought it was a joke. I thought it was fake because I received the email from someone who had seen the list, so he sent me the link and said, oh, you've just been featured on Beyonce.com. And so I sent him a message replying and saying, show me proof. I don't believe you. And I did click it and it was real. And I was just like all over the place. And, you know, I went to my mom. My mom doesn't know who Beyonce is. And she goes, so what does that mean? I'm like, you don't worry about it. You're going to see what it means. And then, you know, shortly after we started to get orders, I'm like, this is what it means.
What advice do you have for people who want to make a difference?
Like, it doesn't have to be big. Honestly, I don't consider like any of the things that I do big enough. So, you know, start with changing one person's life. If you were just being kind to someone with the words that you share with them, putting their names in like rooms where they're not present that, you know, might change their life. I think just start with that. And, you know, these things multiply.
Siobhan Leahy speaking to Fatima Babakura. And that's all from the Happy Pod for now. We'd love to hear from you. As ever, the address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. This edition was made by the team here in Montreal, Siobhan Leahy, Jacob Evans, and our editor, Karen Martin. I'm Holly Gibbs, and let's give the last words to the participants of the 2024 One Young World Summit.
I'm leaving this summit feeling a lot less isolated because I have had the privilege of being surrounded by community, being surrounded by other young advocates, and I feel like I'm leaving here connected to a community of folks who are doing really good work. And I know going forward, if I'm facing difficulties, if I'm facing challenges, there are people I've now connected to that I can reach out to for support. There's a community that I can lean on.
I'm so inspired already about the amazing work people are doing. We work to help girls and women to end gender-based violence, child marriage, and female genital mutilation. So I'm very much inspired to go back to my country to do more work, to work harder to help girls and women to live up to their full potential.
It has really reinstilled my belief in humanity and my optimism for the future. And there are so many young people from around the world that really care. I'm not alone in what I'm doing. And there's other young change makers who are on the same path or different paths. And we're going to change this world. And it's one step at a time.
We are strong alone, for sure. Every person has the ability to lead a movement. But we are so much stronger together.
You know what I was saying yesterday before bed? I was like, I want to be on a podcast. And I was going to put it on my Instagram saying I want to be on a big podcast next year, and here I am being interviewed by BBC. So my dream came to pass. Hallelujah.